Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. We are coming to you today from the Harbour Hotel in Galway as part of the Galway International Arts Festival. Well, we're just down here because the festival's on. We're not part of the festival, obviously. It is time for Movies and Booze. We do have a hashtag. And I'm very pleased to say, because we did do a little review of the show yesterday on our TV review slot. So it's Vin B Movies we're doing today, which is, I'm sure the tribute that Vincent Brown has been waiting for his entire career. Esther McCarthy and Tomás Clancy are with us once again. Esther, I was just asking, Esther, you've never met Vincent Brown. You're about the only hack in Dublin who hasn't.
I know, how could that even be?
Like? I don't know, yeah.
Because a load of people I went to college with were working for the Tribune back in the day. They do a lot of election coverage. They take in the Rathmines college students and stuff like that to do the elections. But I was probably just too lazy to bother.
That was in the Vincent Brown time of the Tribune or before that.
Yeah, I think so. It would have been, 20 years ago.
20 years, yeah, God. Yeah, I did a job interview for the Sunday Tribune with Vincent Brown and I can't remember the name of the news editor. But in those days when you applied for a job, you'd send in cuttings of work that you'd done. And I'd had this interview I was very proud of. I'd done an interview with General O'Callaghan, who was the overall commander of the UNIFIL forces in southern Lebanon. It was all the rage in them days, go down to Tibneen for a month and hang out with a load of Irish soldiers. And I'd written this article, and everyone said this was a great article, but there was one line in it where it said, he's been known to go for sleep without 72 hours. So we're sitting in the interview, and Brown's looking at it, and Brown goes, what's it, 72 hours? Do you ever go without sleep for 72 hours? And then it turned into a full-blown row over whether you could actually go without sleep for 72. And I remember the news editor just rolling his eyes and going, oh, Jesus, you haven't got the job. You might as well just leave now. And indeed, that came to be the case.
So you survived an interview with Vincent.
I survived an interview, but yes, many people probably haven't. Yes. Anyway, Tomás, you were down early.
I was down now so early.
You came down for the cakes.
I came down for the cakes. I came down for just my favourite cake shop in the country, which is the Oven Door on Middle Abbey Street. Absolutely adore it. They make fairy cakes. The last people in Ireland, I think, to make fairy cakes. Everyone else is making cupcakes, but they make beautiful fairy cakes, and they go very well with a nice Albarino, may I say.
Explain what the difference is.
Oh, well, a cupcake is a big yolk. And is essentially American in origin, whereas a fairy cake or a queen cake is actually made in a small, shallow sort of tray that's into the oven, and is about yay big, about sort of the size of one of the old one penny pieces, the old chicken penny pieces, and they've got a little bit of a jam in the bottom of it, and it's a soft Madeira, no big sort of vanillin taste to it, nice Madeira with a really chewy, gorgeous bit of jam at the bottom of it. And they do another one with lovely, just to drop in a few raisins, which are kind of succulent raisins. Maybe the odd one is a sultana. And my God, it's an ecstatic experience. And when you get them warm.
Would you stop? Every woman in the room wants cake now.
Yeah.
So it's very nice.
And why don't people make them anymore then?
I think because the fashion for cupcakes is now, you know, there's cupcake queens and cupcake sort of the drama of cupcake and the suavity of it has drawn people to it, you know.
Only you could come out with a phrase like that and not get slapped for saying it.
Oh, right, yeah. He says, thank God. Somebody was looking there, he says, but I hope I was out. So it's that kind of American thing. It's the same American thing of, you know, calling diapers, you know, nappies diapers and the usual thing. But in fact, it's the muffin, you know. So we go in now and you go anywhere and you just find muffins and cupcakes, when what we really would like is a fruitcake and some fairy cakes, you know. So please, somebody, you know.
That was an impassioned speech about cake nationalism coming over here, taking our cakes. What wine does Tomás like to eat with his favourite cake? Also, what's his favourite cake? Is it the fairy cake that's your favourite cake?
I think it actually is, you know, because I'm a Madeira cake person. I think that's maybe where two things kind of like, you know, where did the wine come from? And I think maybe as a very young child, I was like eating fruitcake and liking the raisins and then not realising that they were grapes. So I was actually eating grapes very young, but in this very baked form. And then Madeira cake obviously has fortified Madeira in it, in its you know, in its proper form. So there I was, you know, fortified Madeira and grapes, 5 years old, thinking, right, this is my future. So that was it. I think, you know, that's it. So a nice, and with those cakes, what's absolutely beautiful is Chardonnay, but old-fashioned Chardonnay. The Chardonnay that's gone out of style now, which is the kind of creamy, buttery, toasty, opulent, you know, sort of bit of a brioche with melted butter on the top of it kind of thing. That kind of affair. Luxuriant, not the steel tank acid bath nonsense that is being pushed out from Chile on a nine-to-five basis.
I'll read you out two texts. I wish I could find someone to talk to me the way Thomas talks about cakes. And Denise says, this is the most positively pornographic description of cake I've ever heard. She says she's getting hot under the collar. And somebody texted in, Sarah, who's in her Ford Ka, says about Saint Sister, says they're positively angelic. They're actually making me tear up here on the M8.
Aww.
That's probably just the M8 that's making her tear up. And lots of people are very excited as well about Jules, you were talking to earlier on, and his outfits. So what movies are we going to be talking to about?
We have two little gems this week, actually, because, you know, usually by kind of coming up to the August weekend when I'm doing the Smurfs 3,
yes,
this time it's personal or whatever they call it, I'm usually kind of beating myself over the head with my palm and going, when will blockbuster season end? But it's kind of picked up in the last few weeks. Wonder Woman was a little pleasant surprise. Dunkirk is doing really well. I don't know if people have had the opportunity to see it yet, but it's something really special, which opened last week. And this week we've got two really great films as well. The Big Sick, which is one of the best rom-coms I've seen in years, in a time maybe when the rom-com we thought was dead and gone, and reclaims it in a very funny way. And then we have a beautiful documentary called The Farthest, which is directed by an Irish woman, Emma Reynolds, and tells the story of the Voyager spacecraft that were sent up to space in the 1970s. A prettier thing on the big screen you will not see this year.
Oh, that's
it's really beautiful. And it's opening here in Galway as well. It's getting a national release, including one of the multiplexes here in Galway.
You've also seen Girls Trip?
I have, yeah.
just to bring things down a little. It's amazing.
I was too happy there for a minute.
It's amazing when you just look at a poster and they might as well put on the poster, yeah, it's crap.
Yeah, it's like we can do The Hangover and we can do it better, basically. So that's what you're getting. The main problem is it's too long. It's well over 2 hours.
Oh, and, crikey.
There's some great, like, urine jokes and male nudity and stuff like that, but it just doesn't all quite pull together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it pull together at all?
Well, I was surprised because, like, the aggregate website that compiles all the reviews and gives them a percentage. Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes. It was in the high 80s, so I went in kind of in a good humour thinking, this might be good, actually, this might be a bit of fun. But I don't think it translates, I don't think it travels across the water, I think that's the main problem with it. And for a film that thinks itself really unconventional, there's a lot of hugging and learning in the second hour.
Oh, God, I hate that.
Yeah.
And when you say male nudity...
Yes.
Are they making a point that we're going to have just naked men for a change?
Well, there was one scene where my eye was nearly poked out. I think we'll just leave it at that.
Oh. So don't see it in 3D.
You don't need to.
Amy says, I'm going to have a hot, steamy night and with cake tonight and play back Thomas's monologue for atmosphere. This is a side job there for you.
Aye.
Can you please ask your wine buff where to get Hungarian Cab Sauv? I've just come back from a trip to Budapest. The wine was out of this world. I've looked in a couple of places, haven't come across any.
You want to look at places like the late Joe Carwig, in Carrigaline in Cork. But you can have a look on the website, which is Carwig, K-A-R-W-I-G, Carwig, and you'll see some Hungarian wines there. But other places do have a few Hungarian wines if you look at Mitchell's and Red Nose Wines in Tipperary. So they are out there, but probably not the one you're looking for, because they dominate with, you know, the sweet wine. So they have the Tokais and so forth. But in fact, having sort of been on the edge of Lake Balaton, driving around, stalking sort of wineries, wineries, and then I followed a truck or two coming out of wineries as it headed down to the way you do, and they ended up in wineries in Friuli in northern Italy. This is quite surprising to see that why a truck would come out of a winery estate in Hungary and end up going into an estate in Italy. So, if
what are you implying?
I don't know what I'm implying, I would say that if you really like that wine and can't find it, well, have a try of some of the northern Italian reds. And you might be surprised how much of it you might enjoy.
I was going to say, does Hungary export many wines? But obviously, yes. Mostly to Italy.
Mostly secretly in that direction. Yes.
But is it a very big, developed business in Hungary, the wine?
It is. It's a huge business. And they have a thing called Bull's Blood, which is their big national red wine. And it's a stonkingly sort of a good, you know, kind of like a Shiraz-like, Australian Shiraz-like wine, and well worth investigating. Tokaj itself and Bull's Blood, the two of those, they were the strong favorites of the Habsburg sort of emperors. Mm. And of course, you know, Hungary, Croatia, all of that, right the way through to essentially the Black Sea, was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So Hungary was, in fact, is the lost sort of breadbasket of wine for Austria and for Vienna. So they have very sophisticated wine culture there. But under the communist sort of regime after the Second World War, or after the First World War, really, they lost it and they collectivized all the farms and turned them into kind of factories for making sort of poor, modest quality wine. But there's brilliant fine wines there. If you go and have a look for them, and they're restoring that culture.
It's yeah, wonderful. How long does it take to come back again then to start producing the high quality wines?
It takes about 15 to 20 years to get a grape, to get a vine up to high quality. Some of the best vines in the world are maybe 70 or 80 years of age. So it's going to take a bit of time for that. But they're now, you know, the ones that have invested, and we're only talking after the fall of the Berlin Wall to see the start of that kind of investment and that kind of return to non-collectivized farm ownership in the whole of Eastern Europe. So I would think in the next 10 years, next 10 or 15 years, we're going to see an ocean of new wine from those countries that'll all be of very high quality, reasonably priced, and the trouble for the future is Australia, Chile, and Argentina are going to face competition from Europe, from Central Europe, for our 10 euro excellent, well-made Cabernet Sauvignon and our nice Chardonnays and Merlots and so forth. So that's the future for that. We need to be inside the EU to get the benefit of all these new EU people that are out there. I can tell you, you know, holding on to Britain so that we can have British sparkling wine is not the way forward for Ireland, okay?
Okay.
You know?
That's Tomás Clancy there, anti-Brexit cake maniac. Tomás opened a wine bar and bakery hybrid. It'd be a nice little moneymaker, says Ciarán.
It's on.
Worth a go.
Yes, yes.
What wines are we going to be talking about today?
We have two wines here. The first, the white one is an Albarino, Laura McQuell Albarino. But Albarino is normally from sort of northern Spain, from the Atlantic coast. This one is from the Languedoc. And it's from a high part of the Languedoc, sort of in at the back of Corbière, very high sort of altitude, so they get that chill. Really rather marvellous, and there's an Irish connection.
Right.
So
good.
We always like an Irish connection. And then the second one is our red wine today is a fascinating project called Double Barrel Cabernet Sauvignon. And what this is an Australian Cabernet Sauvignon that's been put into whiskey barrels, into Irish whiskey barrels. So you get a rich, fortified sort of undercurrent with your Cabernet Sauvignon on top. So a very good, a nice, interesting sort of wine there and a nice story, I think.
Right, okay. When you say fortified, what does that mean?
Well, it's been emboldened by its contact with the sort of Irish whiskey, you know? The shy, retiring, timorous Australian has now encountered the whiskey barrel, the Irish whiskey barrel, where they've been storing whiskey for maybe 10 to 20 years, and that's kind of leached out into it to about a centimetre into the barrel. And then they've emptied that out of whiskey, bottled it, and poured in the Cabernet Sauvignon, the Australian Cabernet Sauvignon, and then let it sit there sort of moving in and out, pulsating the way it does. When the temperature goes up and down.
Everything you say sounds dirty today, I'm sorry.
Just one of those days. It's all very, very good.
Yeah.
They had a long and fruitful marriage.
Yes.
Okay, a long and fruitful marriage in a very legally binding sense.
Stephen in Galway says, once again, I'm up here on the roof with me boss.
The last time I tuned into News Talk, you were talking to the goat man. My boss is just after fecking the radio off the roof after hearing the chat about fairy cakes. Ha ha ha, brilliant. Okay, you're down a radio now. And Vivian Ivers. She in the... There she is. How are you, Vivian? She's here. She'd adore some cake, apparently. Tell her to bring Rob some down to the helpline. Okay, she wasn't that impressed, Rob, to be honest with you. Right, we'll take a commercial break, back in a couple of minutes.
We stand hand in hand like corpses. Our friends are corpses too. And the man who took the photograph likes to look at you. We stand hand in hand like corpses. Our friends are corpses too. And the man who gave the epitaph said I wouldn't do. Darling, I have tried to fix you. I can't count the times that I have kissed you. I never thought that when you built our home, you'd make it out of blood and bones. Darling, one of us should go. My eyes were the first to disappear. Then went my nose, then went my ears with no eyes and no nose. This death that I chose. Eyes and no nose, this death that I chose. You're dead, I'm dead. You said I let you try. Darling, I have tried to fix you. I can't count the times that I have kissed you. I never thought that when you built our home, you'd make it out of blood and bones. Darling, one of us should go. Contagious, my fear and your pain. We look like corpses and our friends look the same. And we all stood together, for worse or for better. We all stood together for a photograph. Yes, we all stood together, for worse or for better. We all stood together for a photograph.
Saint Sister, Thank you both very much for those three songs you gave us today. They're absolutely beautiful. Thanks. Thanks a million for that. We are coming to you today from the Harbour Hotel in Galway City as part of the Galway International Arts Festival. GIAF.ie is their website if you'd like to find out more about that, what's going on at the festival. Tomás Clancy and Esther McCarthy are with us for Movies and Booze. The hashtag is VinBMovies. The King and Eyebrows. lots of eyebrow puns in there. Saint Sister is the name that we keep getting every 4 or 5 minutes. What's the name of them girls again? So Saint Sister is their name. We're having a party for my dad's 70th birthday. We're looking to get a good white and a hearty red that would be crowd pleasers for an eclectic crowd. Can you ask Tomás there where I could buy in bulk that won't break the bank but won't make me look like a cheapskate?
That is the centerpiece of all questions. How to get something absolutely wonderful for no money at all. And the real problem is that it's not really possible. But what we can do is you can you look to where value is at any particular time. And that's why it's interesting, because it changes all the time. So 5 years ago, it was all about Chile. For value. 10 years before that, it was all about Australia for value. Now, you know, really amazing value is to be found in places like South Africa and Spain. So Spain and South Africa are the two places that are the most, you know, the greatest sort of range of quality for the price. I would go for a Rioja. I would go for a really nice Rioja, Marquis de Riscal, very solid Rioja, and look for a Crianza or a Gran Reserva. A Crianza will be pitched in around sort of 15 to 18 euros, a Gran Reserva something around about 20, 25 euros. You get quality without having to explain it. So if you come along with something at a party that's from you know, a new country or another location and people don't know, you have to say, well, it's actually very good. You know, that fellow on the radio was talking about it, you know, really? No, so this way you don't have to do any explanation. People already know what a Rioja is. It's had 300 years of good marketing behind it. So I would go that way, and you'll find real value on that side. On the white side, you want somewhere where there's falling sort of attractiveness. We'll get you some pricing now. White wine is really fashion-driven. Gruner Wertlinger sort of came on and sort of took over the mantle from Pinot Grigio, which took over the mantle from Australian-type big buttery Chardonnay. And so, and right now, Albarino is the coming thing. Well, it's not coming. It's been there for about a year and a half. So I would think about, you know, think about a Gruner Wertlinger, really good, you know, from nice Australian Gruner. There's quite a few of them out there, and you'll get something really attractive for around about 15 to 18 euros again, and it will be a crowd pleaser because it's charming and it has worked. It has been popular in the past.
Mm. Fiona texted in to say, my uncle has a vineyard by Lake Balaton. He has the most delicious white wine I've ever tasted. Maybe our wine guy should drop in next time he's spinning around Lake Balaton. Where is Lake Balaton?
It is, it's in Hungary. And it's in the southern sort of neck of the woods there. When you, it's huge. It's rather massive. And there's kind of two sides. The right-hand side of all of these lakes gets the rain sort of shadow from essentially from the Alps. And so they kind of get a bit musky and a bit sort of wanton sort of clouds in the morning, a little bit of mist. And that's where you get their rot, and you get all the fantastic Trockenbierlese and all the sweet sort of botrytis type wines. And that's absolutely brilliant. And that's on the right-hand side of all these things, and Balaton the same. And then on the left-hand side of the lake, the west-hand side of the lake, it gets huge big wind rushing down, clean, dry air, and you get all these vibrant, beautiful white wines. Please send us one in to News Talk, and I'm sure we'd love to look at it.
Staying with Hungary, somebody wanted to know about a Hungarian cab. So now, you tell me, Tomás, whether this sentence has an inbuilt contradiction in it. There's a nice Hungarian cab Sauvignon in Aldi for $5.99.
No, there is no contradiction in that at all. None at all. No, my feeling on wine is that it has to be, you've got to think about the price. Nobody in Ireland is more than three generations away from soil. So we all understand that, you know, you can't produce something for nothing. And if something is too cheap, that's not a bargain. It's an exploitation of somebody somewhere along the line. So $5.99, I'm concerned at how low the price is. Think about the taxes there. And I always say this, but I say it again. How much love can you give for 60p? Me, very little love for 60p, okay? 5,000 euros in an evening, you know, who knows? But, you know, so for 60 cents, bit of cake, a lot of cake. But 60 cents, I just don't see it. So it could be okay. The reason why I didn't, you know, we don't dismiss it is because they have very, it's a hard sell. It's a really hard sell. So Romanian wines are a hard sell for us. Some of the sort of Croatian wines and some Hungarian wines are hard sell. So they really need to sell it. So it's probably undervalued.
Okay.
You know, so that's it. So I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand. No.
Okay. Kay in Dublin says, tell your man there he's inspired me. I have you on my headphones here in the supermarket. I've rushed over to the cake making aisle to get the ingredients for fairy cakes. I'll be heading over to the wine aisle next. Can you ask him if I should make a buttercream icing?
Ooh, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Yes, you should.
Yeah, I don't know. If anyone's listening with children, just make them go in the other room.
Why, yes.
Can I just say one thing? Between the cake and the wine, Tomás Clancy is my spirit animal. It's a good thing there isn't much dialogue. And now, the few comments about Dunkirk that you were praising last year. It's a good thing there isn't much dialogue in Dunkirk because neither I nor the three people I went with could make out much of it. Maybe the cinema's fault, but a lot to do with the full-on music and sound effects on my poor ears.
I had an issue with some of the sound as well, actually. And when we came out of the press screening for it, we were discussing whether maybe that was deliberate, that you were supposed to be in this chaos of the situation and not picking up everything that everyone said. I think it's William's score, and it is very overpowering, like, and it does actually drown out some of the dialogue. So, that happened.
Can you please tell Esther, thank you for recommending Dunkirk. I was so in awe of it that I sat in the cinema till the credits finished rolling. If that doesn't clean up at the Oscars, I will eat my hat and my left shoe, says Jim.
I'm hearing a lot of that this week. And, you know, people love to bicker with me if I'm raving about something. And that's part of the fun and all of that. But I am only hearing universal wows back from people about Dunkirk.
Except from Frank, who says, I was underwhelmed by Dunkirk. Yes, it was well made, but the characters are poorly drawn. Cillian Murphy's character was especially disappointing. Kenneth Branagh had little to do beyond look worried for most of the film. Action sequences were good but not great.
That is, if there is an argument to be made against Dunkirk, that is the argument, in fairness. But I think that's very much what Nolan was setting out to do. No actor really gets to shine here. And I think come the Oscars, you'll see technical across the board, but maybe struggling to get acting nominations because it's very much an ensemble cast. Mm. And even an A-lister like Kenneth Branagh, he's really good in the scenes he's in, I think, but he's not given a whole lot of screen time. Yeah. Even Cillian Murphy, albeit Christopher Nolan regular, is one of a number of characters, and that's the whole kind of point of the film.
Okay, fair enough. Somebody's texted in wanting to know, how long does it take to learn the harp? Yeah, she says the weekend. going back to Girls Trip that you saw, somebody wants to know, is this movie going to get me laid? I'm about to book cinema tickets for the weekend for me and a girl. I've been seen for the last while, and I would really like to, if it means sitting through a chick flick, then so be it.
Well, what I really want is that person to text back in next week and tell us
whether it succeeded or not. Yes. Okay, let's move on to our first wine, Tomás.
Excellent. Our first wine today is, this is Laura McQuell, and this is Alania Albarino from the Languedoc. And it comes in an absolutely amazingly beautiful bottle, which is a clean white bottle in a straight form. You could empty this of Albarino when you're finished, and it could be a lovely water bottle. And one of the things that's the new feature
the
that's attached
is
here
brilliant.
Is the stopper. This is called a Vinolock, which I'm holding up now to rate it. Good. Yeah. This is a beautiful piece of glass that attaches into the bottle and
locks it down.
It just absolutely snaps shut. And you can then hold the bottle upside down.
Risky maneuver? Well
risky,
done.
Risky
yes.
maneuver. And there's nothing coming out of it.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And so you could use it for a water bottle and use it, you know, put it back into the fridge and so forth. So eminently useful. However, its storage for wine is its real happiness. And what this is Albarino. Albariño, as I was saying, often comes from really from Spain, and ideally from Rías Baixas, and that's where it's been most popular. It spent 300 years there not being popular. It was brought by monks, essentially, brought it very slowly along the Santiago de Compostela route from a variety of locations, but probably, most likely, from Germany. Probably from Frankfurt and maybe from Cologne. And they came down and they stopped in lots of little monasteries on the way. And this is what monks did. They traded one of their commodities, and the monastic commodities that they had were cuttings. So a lot of cuttings, because they were in the sort of the cuttings business. They were in the farming business. They were in the wine business. So Alba Rino is Alba white and Rino of the Rhine. So it's the white of the Rhine. So in fact, really what this more or less is essentially a Riesling. But it's a Riesling that has mutated over its sort of 100-year journey from Cologne and from Rheingau out to the edge of the world, to Finisterre, to the end of the world, to where St. James is buried in Santiago. And so they then planted it, and it worked very well. It works extremely well. Nobody thought it. But it's very tough. Because Germany is so high up, in terms of latitude, moving away from the equator, it's very cold. And so a lot of its successful, a lot of the grapes there, have through trial and error, have evolved, or they've, you know, through clonal selection, the kind of grapes you have there are really, they're hardy, very hardy, and they will survive cold winters and frost and so forth. So Albariño, like a lot of these, it has a thick skin. And is quite amenable to being shoved out onto the Atlantic Ocean and being blasted by 6,000 miles of Atlantic cold winds. And it survives and creates a beautiful, a very nice sort of light and kind of crisp wine with a good salinity to it. There's a nice saltiness to it. Here, we're not on the Atlantic edge. We're high. So if you can't go north up towards Germany, the way that you cool down grapes and anything at all is to just head up into altitude. And so what you've got in the Pyrenees, on the slopes of the Pyrenees, sweeping down towards Narbonne, is you've got a whole set of smaller mountains and smaller hills, and Corbière, which is where this is from, is one of those places. And this is inland from the main Corbière, a little higher than most of the Corbière, where there's red wine from. And this is where this Laura McQuell, a man called Laura McQuell, and his wife, Nessa, who's from Fox Rock in Dublin. And they met, she was recommended by her school. The school was recommending them go over and do babysitting and au pairing and so forth.
Yeah, the fact she's from Fox Rock is not a surprise there.
She was matched up with lots of good places, but she was out at a disco on the beach in Narbonne, and she bumped into the multimillionaire Laura McQuell, he was a young man and he didn't own it, all right? So, and she had no idea who he was. It was love at first sight. And they kept up a distant relationship, a long distance relationship for a couple of years. And eventually she gave in, married, and went down there. And she's now living in the Languedoc in a rather beautiful winery in a chateau. And this actual one called Chateau Ozine, which has a lovely veranda, which looks out over the sweeping vineyards that are the Albariño vineyards. And they're very leafy. Very, very green and very leafy. They practice organic agriculture there, so not no chemicals and so forth. And they're producing this wine, which I think is rather exquisite, lean, citric, but a little bit luscious, a little marmalade-y, like that marmalade, lime marmalade kind of prickliness at the side of the mouth, which gives that kind of juiciness when you're drinking it. Clean, well made. It is available for $16.95, but on sale for the next few days in $14.95. You'll find it in places like O'Brien's Wine, so i.e. nationwide, you'll find it everywhere. And they're making a lot of other good wines in the Languedoc. There's some amazing producers down there. One of the key elements to it, but I don't think it manifests itself here, is they're looking to reduce the levels of alcohol. And that's one of the things that they've tried to pull back on. And they've been, again, by going high in altitude, you can lower the over-ripeness that tends to happen in the lower valleys, particularly after the climate change of the last sort of few years. So this is only 12%. So this is a 12% wine that has all the, you know, charm and benefit of a nice white wine with lower alcohol and a good, crisp, clean finish and a wonderful bottle at the end of it all. Which you can use again.
That's brilliant. On the subject of the price of wine, Mairead, who's in County Cork, she's in Bandon, says, in the price of wines, if you buy Marcus de Caceres in Supercor in Spain, it's 640. It's 16 euro here.
That is down to the government that we have elected, the successive governments that we have elected, because this is, if you look at a 12 or 14 euro bottle of wine, what you're looking at is around about 8 euros is transportation, tax, customs and excise duty. We're supposed to be in a union, an open movement of goods, but we have excise on these goods as they transfer across this this so-called open market. So tax, the bulk of this is tax. Yes, you know, there's a little bit of profit taking. Most of the people who are importing the wine would like to eat three times a day if possible and make a little money out of it. So if you're not a hardened Marxist, you will agree that they are entitled to their pound 50, euro 50. But the bulk of that money is, like in petrol, it's tax.
Mm. Somebody else texted in to say, I married 33 years today. I just made fairy cakes for my husband. Thanks for the idea. I'm tearing up. What movie would you like to do first?
We Interstellar, will we? And do the documentary, The Farthest.
The Farthest, yeah. Coming up after this break.
4 billion years from now, when our sun turns into a red giant, Voyager is still going to be trucking out there through the stars. We'll still be out there.
The chance that advanced intelligence beyond us would detect, oh, hey, there's a radiating body coming into our area. Let's go out and find out what this bottle in the ocean, what message it might have. Now, is that a grand mystery? Whoa.
I'd like to know the answer. Are we alone? I'd like to know the answer to that question.
There you go. That's a clip from The Furthest, the first of our two movies we're going to be talking about today. A documentary, Esther. It's rare enough we kind of start off with a documentary.
It almost plays out like a romance and a melodrama, though. You sometimes forget you're watching a documentary at all. And I'm kind of in love with this film, I have to say. And the fact that it would win me over, the girl who had to take grinds to do past maths in the Leaving Cert, and, you know, the girl who taught an acute angle was an angle that was nicer than the other angles.
No.
I don't know anything about maths or science or any of that. And I would say I struggle to keep up at times. I mean that in as a compliment to Emma Reynolds, who doesn't pander or talk down to her audience here. This is really intelligent and beautiful filmmaking. And like the end of maybe a great John Hughes movie, it's where the maths kids get to be the cool kids, because the contributors to this film are a lot of the people who would have been involved in the 70s in the establishment of NASA's Voyager program, where they sent two probes, I suppose, up to outer space in 1977. And, you know, just threw out this message in a bottle to the other planets. And a number of years later, one of them had traveled 12 billion miles away from Earth.
Because they left, after they did flybys planets, they left the solar system.
Left the solar system. And, you know, we got the first photography of some of the more distant planets that we know of. And they showed the, you know, Neptune's moon and storms, and all these incredible photographs we saw coming through over the years came from Voyager. And it's just a really wonderful film, and it's so creatively made. Like, if you love your documentaries but you think, I'll wait till it comes to Netflix, I'll definitely watch it. This has to be seen on the biggest screen you can find, the biggest cinema screen you can find, because what Emma Reynolds has done is use a combination of actual footage of Voyager and got a great director of photography to do photography of Earth, and then used an amazing kind of sequence of visual effects to all combined and constant moving pictures on screen, and it just looks absolutely beautiful. But it's got a great sense of humour as well. The characters involved are such fun. Like, they're talking about the Golden Record, which is, as one of the contributors there say, when you throw a bottle into Earth, out of Earth, you might as well put a great message on it. So what they did was they got a few different characters together, including a guy by the name of Carl Sagan. He was an astronomer. Mm. He also ended up writing Contact, actually. It was the Jodie Foster movie. Mm. And they had a guy called Frank Drake, who probably has
the coolest
job in the world. His job is to search for extraterrestrial intelligence. But they kind of had a few characters involved as well. They had Tim Ferriss, who was the den editor of Rolling Stone magazine. And they just had 6 weeks to put this, you know, if an alien life force in years to come is to find this capsule and
well, that happens in one of the Star Trek movies. They do find it and it grows a head and comes back to eat.
Yeah,
the
well,
Earth
when you
something.
Find stuff like that, that never ends well.
No, it never ends well.
You keep them contained, guys. Don't go in to talk to them. It always ends badly. But anyway, this Golden Record features music from Bach and from Chuck Berry. And you can actually listen to this. I only found this out the other day. You can listen to this on the NASA website. It's like 90 minutes of audio of, you know, people saying hello from planet Earth in 55 different languages. And it's just absolutely beautiful, actually, if you get a chance to dip in and out of it. It's really gorgeous. The Beatles aren't there, interestingly enough, because their record companies couldn't decide how they'd handle a licensing issue that involved going to outer space. So, and then one of the contributors are really funny. As I say, it's the scientists' time to shine in this. And they say, you know, they send out some Chuck Berry music out and they say, maybe our first message from, you know, this other life force will be sent to Earth saying, send more Chuck Berry,
yes.
Which is very dryly done.
Did Netflix pay for this? Is it a Netflix production?
No, it's not. It's getting a theatrical release. Sorry, I said I'd wait for it to come to Netflix, by which I meant when the eventual deal with a TV company will be done. But it was made as well. It's just made with so much love. And I love the randomness that it's made by a dub who spent most of her time, Emma Reynolds, who spent most of her time on her uncle's farm in County Tipperary and can remember being 8 years of age and being such a science freak, her words, not mine, by even the age of eight, that she'd be lying on the ground looking up the Milky Way on her in the farm outside Mullaghone and literally holding onto the grass because she knew how fast planet Earth was moving around the sun. And she used to keep a little pink notebook with all her new space facts that she would keep on a regular basis. So it's just, you know, she ended up studying physics and pure maths in Trinity and thought that might be her path. But I would just say she wanted to be an astronaut, but I would just say NASA's loss is very much cinema's gain in this regard. It's a beautiful, beautiful looking film. She made a movie called Here Was Cuba a few years ago about the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is well worth your time as well. But this is really a step up for her. I think you could be looking at a serious contender here for Ireland come award season.
Okay, well done. Took all of 10 seconds for a nerd to text in. The Star Trek The Voyage Home was the one that Voyager was in. What was the name of the wine with the reusable bottle again? Somebody wants to know.
It's the Laura McQuell Albarino. And you'll see it, you'll find it in O'Brien's wines generally.
Someone says, I'm not saying Dunkirk is the greatest film of all time, but it's so different from every other war film and blockbuster that I think I'll remember seeing it for a very long time. It's a full-on assault on the senses and that ticking sound, says the texter. Joanne says, the soundtrack in Dunkirk is meant to be overwhelming. It ties in with the time pressure they're under and the overwhelming noise of war. Nolan devised this with Hans Zimmer and actually gave him the recording of a ticking clock to set the score to. He also created the characters in such a way that you're not supposed to worry about them as individuals. Some are intentionally cold. Being immersed in the horror of war alone should drive your emotions as a viewer.
And I'm glad that person texted in because, of course, it wasn't Williams who did the score. It was Hans Zimmer. My bad there.
Yeah. Mixing actually two things together, because you might have a view on this, Tomas. Can you tell Esther that after watching Dunkirk, I felt it had a pro-Brexit feel, assuring Britons that they can go it alone again?
No, but I think it's timely. And he never bangs you over the head with it, but I think it's timely where we are, what these people had to go through to get home safely. And it's a nice, potent reminder, I think, given what's going on at the moment.
And given Tomás's comments about cake and about tax and wine, inevitably someone's texted in to say they can see Tomás running for election next time out. His slogan would be, "Let them eat cake."
I think it's worked before. It's worked out well before.
And a woman says, "I don't know if it's my roaring hangover or the fact that my monthly is due, but I just burst into tears when you read the text about the woman making fairy cakes." You should see the guy in the bus next to me. He doesn't know what to do. My daughter's having her first sleepover this Saturday. They're going to be about 10 giggling 13-year-olds taking over the sitting room. We were thinking of having a movie marathon to go with their midnight feast. Would Esther be able to recommend some films that might be from a bygone era that would still be relevant to their taste today?
Oh.
Also, while I'm here, can your wine expert tell me what nice red wine I could treat myself to on the Saturday after they all leave?
What age are they again?
They're 13.
Okay, so you're in for a treat there. So the Breakfast Club has to be top of that list. The Goonies, I think, has to be there. All the John Hughes movies, because they're just the right age where, you know, the characters are a little bit older and more sus than they are. So they'll be ultra cool for that age group. And then you have to go down Pixar memory lane as well. Up and Wally have to be top of that list, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I think any wine would probably do after they leave, really. Good lie down. Is there any wine that goes with curry? Everyone says that you should have beer with a curry, but I can't stomach the stuff.
Beer works very well with it. But in fact, things like Gewürztraminer. You give a Gewürztraminer a try, and you might be pleasantly surprised. Riesling actually does work very well. But a Riesling from Alsace, kind of softer Riesling. Well, all you want is something that has a nice piercing top and a smooth mid palate, and doesn't have too much fat in it. And if you can do that, it counterpoints the astringency within the curry. So try a nice Riesling from Alsace, something like from Trimbach. So a nice Trimbach will do it very well. And there's also a category of wine from Alsace called Gentile, Gentile, and that's a combination of about five of their white grapes into a very soft sort of bellied wine, but with a little peaking sort of acidity towards the far end of it. Works very well with a lot of Asian dishes.
Does it help if it's like a really, like if you're eating, if it's really hot, you're there sweating like you're wearing a Wookiee costume? Is the wine going to help, or you're just going to get seriously drunk?
You're going to get it'll just assuage that the pain that you feel there. I think
temporarily. That's it. Right, we have to take another break. We'll come back with another glass of wine, another film after this. 53106 is our text number. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Right, we're coming to you today from the Harbour Hotel in Galway as part of the Galway International Arts Festival. The hashtag is VinBMovies. The Brown Ultimatum. Answer the question. You still haven't answered my question. Four words, Ferris Bueller's Day Off for the 13-year-old sleepover.
Oh, that's great fun.
Outer space film. Wouldn't we be better off keeping our heads down instead of searching for other life forms in space? If they, aliens, are clever enough to decipher our message, then they're clever enough to find us, farm us, and eat us, says Peter.
That's going to be the sequel, though, you see.
Yeah, that's what will happen next. Can you ask your wine expert, is Madeira wine available here? Can never find it in local wine shops.
Yes, it is. It's very hard to find because it's quite expensive and people aren't buying it. So it's not very popular. But Henrique and Henrique, H-E-N, Henrique and Henrique is a really good brand. You'll find it in places like Mitchell's in Dublin. You'll find it in Greenacres in Wexford. And I think you might find some in Woodbury's here on Middle Street in Galway as well.
Right, okay. The inevitable I have a bottle of.
Yes.
A Chateau Chalon, Chalon 1987 white. Should I drink it or keep it?
Yeah, I would drink it. It's, it's a good wine, but it's not...
you haven't won the lotto.
No, it's not Domaine Romani Conti.
We're
still waiting for that dividend to come through.
right, let's move on to our second wine of the day.
Our second wine today is, it's called, it's Jacob's Creek. double barrel Cabernet Sauvignon. So Jacob Screep was one of the first people into the Irish New World wine market. And they were one of the first companies to really break through and bring an end to the dominance of France and Italy. So in the 1980s, if we were talking about wine, or the 1990s, Piat d'Or, all of these things, they were the major players, along with Black Tower and Blue Nun. So that was that was the landscape of charm that was out there, unless you could move to higher levels of quality. And then suddenly along come Jacob's Creek, and they bring good quality wine at very reasonable prices. Now, they have, along with a lot of Australia, Australia has become very expensive. It's become expensive because taxation, transportation, all of these other issues. The reason why there's Australian wine at all, the reason why there's Argentinian wine and Chilean wine and South African wine, is because our very wise ancestors said, we can't be sending you all this liquid to the other end of the world. Have some vines, grow them yourself, drink it there. That was the whole idea. And only the last 120 years of cheap petrol and the invention of the internal combustion engine has allowed us to drag an ocean of wine from the other end of the world back to us. And we won't be doing it for much longer because we'll have competition, as we said, from the European world, and the cost of doing this will become very expensive. So what's happening is a lot of these countries know that. And so what they're doing is they're elevating their wines so that the wines that are $5.99, $6.99, that's not going to be transported. What will be transported are wines that are 17 and 18 and 20 and 50 and 200 euros a bottle. It'll be worth transporting those. So what we've got here is a really just a sign from Australia. We're not finished yet. We have something to give the story of wine. We're innovative. We're charming. We're interesting people. And what they've done is, for the last 300 years, well, really from the 1780s onwards, the whiskey industry in Ireland and in Scotland and then across the world started buying barrels, Madeira barrels, sherry barrels, port barrels, and we pour our whiskey into those barrels, and they give us a different type of flavour. And in fact, the Irish sort of mark, the imprimatur of great Irish whiskey, is that we often put it into two or three different barrels. And the task and brilliance of assembly blenders in Middleton, for instance, Irish distillers, they are buying, and they have a palette of barrels, whiskey barrels, of barrels from all over the world. And they're taking, they will have a, so Jameson might have 20% bourbon, 20% sherry, 18% sort of toasty Madeira, and so forth. And they've gained a great expertise at colouring the palate of Irish whiskey using these barrels. And the barrels infuse lots of taste to them. Now, here comes the reverse. Here is a wine region and a wine company who've said, do you know the barrels that you've taken from here to use and flavour with your whiskey? Your whiskey has flavoured them. You've been drawing the flavours of these great wine regions, and now we might think about drawing the quality that you have instilled into that and the taste that you've put into that barrel back for us. And that's what they've done. So this is a mélange, a blend of Irish whiskey talent and Australian talent. They are, however, both owned by Pernod Ricard, so there is an in-house family connection to them, and that's they're really advancing that cause for themselves. Very clever, very, very, very well done. So what we have here is Cabernet Sauvignon, and the Cabernet Sauvignon is Australian. So it's got that kind of meaty, high, ripe, glycerol, epic glycerol taste. Australian wine is brilliant because it's always ripe. It's very rare to get a bad vintage coming out of Australia. If you love Bordeaux wine and you're prepared to go very expensively, you can always find reasonable wine. But for the for any kind of ordinary wine, they've like our summers. Mm. They're a coastal Atlantic sort of region in Europe, really only sort of 3 hours by plane south of us. So they have a bad summer, and it's all green and stalky and doesn't get ripe. They have a great summer, and it's all hot and toasty, and it's wonderful. And so one of the horrors of wine knowledge over the last sort of couple hundred years is to know, was it a good year or a bad year? But all you have to really do is think about, what was it like in Ireland? How disastrous was it? Now, obviously, we're looking at the 3 days. brilliant summer, one day, disastrous summer. So if you can remember the three glorious days of the Irish summer, you think it was a great year, and then you'll know that Bordeaux is heading in that direction. We don't have to do that for Australia. So, because we know it's consistently good. The problem is that then that gets you a sameness. You get a same quality. You're always looking at it. But consistency, people seem to like consistency. And so Jacob's Creek and many other great brands, Penfolds and McWilliams and lots of these, they're very consistent, very good. What they do here by putting it into the whiskey barrel is they add a third sort of layer to what they're doing. And so instead of just being their own barreling and their own fruit, they've now got the barrel that's coming with the whiskey to it. So if you've tasted that now in your glass, you get that kind of... There's a strong basso profundo. There's a big bass element to this going
down.
How
long is it in the barrel for?
Oh, I mean, not too long. I would say no more than, from what they're telling me, no more than about, you know, a few months. Enough to put...
And is there actual pulsating involved?
There's pulsating. The whole...
Do they put it on a little pulsator?
They don't put it on a pulsator, but as the temperature goes up and down overnight and during the summer and during the months, is that it breathes. It breathes. All wine in barrels, one of the things you do, if you don't want any breathing, you put it into a steel tank and nothing happens, okay? It stays in there and all of the internal sort of production goes on. If you want something organic to happen, you put it into the wood. It seeps into the wood. As it sort of warms up, it expands a bit. Then when the thing cools down, it comes out and it draws it out of it. So that's it. It really creates this.
How strong is it and how much is it?
Well, they're saying it's 14%, and I have no reason not to believe them. So I would think that it's a good hefty wine. It's priced at around about you'll find it for about 15 on promotion around the country, but its true price is $17.99. It's widely available in, you'll find it in all off licenses and supermarkets and good stores.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Right, we'll move on to our second film. It is The Big Sick. Here's a clip.
I think ice cream is better than kulfi.
No. What?
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's a young, single Pakistani woman who just happened to be driving by our house, which is in a cul-de-sac. Wow. And I'm also guessing that the phrase, dropped in, will be said in the next 10 seconds.
10, 9, 8, 7.
What?
Everyone, this is Zubeda. She just dropped in. Salam.
Oh. Walaikum salam.
Here, Kumail, for your files, good. Your X-Files, because
thank you.
That's your favorite show, huh?
Thank you so much.
The truth is out there.
It's from the show.
Right now, what's...
This is hilarious. Yeah. And very sweet.
And the whole girlfriend in a coma thing is a true story.
I know. It's serious.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's a true story. It's fabulous. It starts off as this little culture clash comedy where, as we've just heard there, this man played by Kamal Nanjiani, who actually wrote the script and whose life it's based on and is a star in the making on the basis of this film. He is, you know, trying to humour his Pakistani Muslim family, I suppose, while secretly working as a stand-up comedian and using his comedy to get laid with plenty of American girls. So he's got all of that going on. Until one night he meets a character named Emily, played by the wonderful Zoe Kazan, who's the granddaughter of Elian, who directed On the Waterfront, of course, that great filmmaker, and brilliant, mostly because she looks like a normal girl. She doesn't look like Jennifer Lawrence, you know. She's a great actress as well, but there's just an every woman quality about her which is really appealing and played very well here. And he is kind of instantly in love with her, but kind of messes it all up on the with the whole culture clash thing and the demands of his family, and they split up. She gets hurt, but then one evening he gets a phone call out of the blue to say she is in hospital in a coma, very seriously ill. And nothing screams lengthy periods in hospital waiting rooms, I guess, than sitting across from the parents of the girl whose heart you recently broke and have never met. So those parents, thankfully, are played by the wonderful Holly Hunter and Ray Romano, who are just brilliant here and who have their whole own relationship subplot going on, which is really nicely done as well. And it's, it broke my heart. I was crying a lot in the second hour. It's really beautiful. It's very funny. And I was crying just because the amount of truth in it, in just the little lines of dialogue that people say and stuff. It's one of the best scripts I've come across this year. It's played for all it's worth. Judd Apatow is on the poster as a producer. Don't let that put you off, I would say. Yes. This is very real and doesn't feel constructed, and it just feels like these are real people that you get to spend time with. But I absolutely loved it.
He did co-write it with his wife, and that's their relationship story. She was in a coma.
The relationship story, yeah. So, and it's a great script. Like, it's just... It's getting it right on the page, but also the performances are just really, really super. And there is a 9/11 joke in there, and I did not think it's outrageous. Well, and I did not think I'd hear it in my lifetime.
No, well, that's been much because he's a Muslim, he's, you know, he gets this all the time at a various point. People always say, well, what do you think of 9/11? And his answer is always, well, we lost some of our best guys that day.
You're at ease, you know. Holding your hands up to your face at the same time when that joke lands, and that's what's great about it, and that's what it's reclaiming the rom-com in a way, and it's raising the bar now for other people, because it's never manipulative or poignant or trying to play you. It's just so punchy and real and honest that it makes it actually all the more moving.
How funny is it?
Very, very funny. When I say I cried a lot, I don't know what was going on with me that day. Everyone else around me was roaring laughing.
Yeah, okay.
And I suppose I should say I'm a bit of a crier at films, mostly because they're so bad.
Had you eaten cake that day?
No, but I remember once going to P.S. I Love You, and the first 20 minutes I was going, what manipulative nonsense? And then I started crying, and I had to hide in the toilets until all the other critics had left, so they wouldn't see me.
The shameful revelations of a movie critic.
Then that you have to bear that in mind, okay?
Right, we're pretty much out of time, I'm afraid. We won't do What's On. Just come down to Galway and go to anything that's taking place at the Galway International Arts Festival is our recommendation to you today. Thanks to our audience for coming in. Thanks, of course, to the Harbour Hotel as well for being so welcoming and accommodating today. And thanks to everybody at the Galway International Arts Festival, Esther and Tomás. Always a pleasure. Our production team today, Paul Buckland, Niamh Hassel, Claire Collins, and Michael Quilligan and Jess Kelly. Drives up next on News Talk. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2:00. See you then.
Miss Jackson.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.